Lee Berman, former White House Social Secretary to George and Laura Bush.
Jeremy Bernard, former White House Social Secretary for President and Mrs. Obama.
We'd like to welcome you both to WTOP. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
The book is Treating People Well, The Extraordinary Power of Civility and Work in Life. Can you first start out by talking about the jobs that you did? It's my understanding outside of the press area and the Oval Office, the rest is up to the social secretary as far as all the gatherings, large and small.
You said it perfectly. Anything that occurs, it could be a press statement, a press conference, an announcement of a cabinet member or something. Everyone always said, oh, you're the party planner. The truth of the matter is most of our days were filled with events that really weren't parties. They were statements, or they were a press conference or something like that. So it was, every day was really different. Some days we'd have be there all day and it'd be constant. And then there are other days that we might have one or two events.
Party planner is a bit of a demeaning label. I mean, that's my opinion, of course. I don't know if
it is a little more than that, because it requires the social secretary has to understand the policies of the president so that the events reflect their interests and not just their style.
Let me ask a question that's going to make me sound like an elitist, but I think you bring it up in the book. Did each of you feel you deserved the position that you held? In the past, they've been held by, I don't know what the right label is or expression is, but people...
Aristocrats.
For whatever reason, you said, how did I find myself in this position?
I think we both have the same... One of the things that was amazing getting to know Lee was how many issues and feelings about the job and you know, obstacles and pluses we had in common. She felt the same way. Both of us, I know just from our joking about it, wondered when they were going to find out. And I mean, that we didn't belong, because every time I walked in those gates, I thought, how did I get here?
It was like a karmic joke, particularly because neither of us are naturally gregarious people. We both have had some shyness and some social anxiety in our lives. And so being able to do this job was a big leap for us. And that's part of the reason we wrote the book, because we wanted to show everyone that if they feel uncomfortable walking into a room full of strangers, there are ways to combat that, to correct it, specific techniques and things that we learned in our lives and working at the White House that we wanted to share with others.
We'd like to get into some of those, but first, let me speak plainly. People get together for all kinds of gatherings, holiday and otherwise, and they have too much to drink, and they misbehave, and I think both of you saw quite a bit of that. The White House is not special in that regard.
That's true, and the White House also has some very good but very strong eggnog, and it hits people quick. In fact, President Obama would often at the parties warn the crowd, be careful with that eggnog. And sure enough, I don't think a year passed, it at least didn't happen once, and people suddenly feel sick and they don't want to be sick toward the other guests, so the immediate reaction is to head for the Christmas tree, and that's where they would often vomit in one of the Christmas trees. So we would sometimes try to guess which night was going to be the worst, or which party was going to be the worst. The other was St. Patrick's Day, was also a heavy drinking day.
Do each of you recall an experience where you were looking for the nearest closet to run into, but of course you couldn't because it was your job to keep stability?
Well, St. Patrick's Day, to go back to that, I remember once watching this lovely, elderly, sweet-looking nun clothesline one of the military officers who was part of the president's honor guard in her zeal to go shake the president's hand.
Oh, my goodness.
And the audience gasped and everything stopped, and I hurried over and I helped the aide up, who was a very healthy, strapping aide, and offered to get her something to drink. And we moved the nun off into the reception area and pretended as if nothing had ever happened, and people forgot about it quickly, which was one of our ways of dealing with an awkward problem, is to make it go quickly.
Well, I think just as important, I mean, it's not my place to say the most important aspect of your book, but just as important, few of us are going to host state dinners and important heads of state. All of us are going to deal with difficult people, awkward situations. What are the lessons that you offer?
Well, this was, in a sense, the book we wish we had before we started the jobs or when we started the job, a lot of it was on the job training. So we really, and we went back and forth on which one should be included, what should be first, and how, and the order, because one builds on the other. But it really was an effort to show that you have to be conscious and aware to treat people well, because everything is so fast-paced. People are used to immediate response, immediate reaction, everything on the internet. And it's very easy to fall into treating people poorly. It's contagious. So it really takes an effort. And it's not, the things we talk about are not difficult. It's, they're common sense, but you have to be aware and you have to work for it.
Lee, what would you add? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, listen first, then talk. Things that really we probably all should have started learning in kindergarten, if not sooner than that.
Exactly. These are universal precepts that the ancient Greeks used to talk about, how you behave being a reflection of your integrity and character. And that's still true today. Treating everyone you interact with respect and dignity, giving them the benefit of the doubt when maybe they aren't behaving so well. This almost makes... almost always makes people respond in the same way, and it makes life easier for everybody, takes some of the stress out of daily life. Being able to tell a joke at just the right moment in a tense meeting can diffuse tension and make people relax, and it will also make the joke teller look like someone who's got a lot of confidence.
Not that we're in the business of lecturing anyone, but I find myself trying to impress upon young people that when you behave in a civil way, you're not weakening yourself.
Exactly.
You're strengthening yourself.
Right.
But there seems to be a disconnect there, that there needs to be that constant hard shell and you're not going to get the best of me and that kind of attitude.
Right. I think there is a narrative that rudeness is tough and that rudeness works. And I think that narrative is really wrong, because it takes strength, and it takes strength of character for someone to be one that treats others with respect. Just putting other people down and being rude, that's not powerful to me. That's weak.
The current president, to say the least, is a most unusual one. Do you suspect that the people that are doing the kind of work for President Trump that you did for Presidents Obama and Bush have a whole other layer of complexity, or are they going through pretty much the same things that you folks did?
You know, I can't speak to that, having not been there yet and not knowing very many of the staff, but I'm sure that going from being in business or in politics to being in the White House is an enormous learning curve for anybody. Then you have a president who's not someone who's having a political background. So there's a lot of inexperience there, and they have catching up to do that other presidents and their staffs may not have had.
Would you add something?
I would say that I think that many of the experience, many of the things they are working through and learning are the same things we did. The difference is, and I saw it when I was there. When I started in 2011, Facebook was big and most people had social media. But within a couple of years, everyone was coming to the White House with a phone, with a camera, and taking photos. And so there were certain events where we had a phone check, like a coat check, because Mrs. Obama wanted people to enjoy the moment and not focus on getting the picture or showing off or whatever. And so one of the things that I had to deal with, certain things that Lee didn't have, and I'm certain now the current social secretary is dealing with some other, social media and other phenomenons that are happening, and it changes the way you operate.
You set the table perfectly for a bit of a chain that I want to start here. Lee, you came first. So what did you tell Jeremy? And then Jeremy, what did you tell your successor?
I told Jeremy never to do an outdoor event without a backup plan.
and then he didn't listen, is my understanding.
That's right.
And I suggested that he get to know the resident staff and become really good friends with them and be well connected, because they are so important to how the White House runs every day. They have great loyalty to both the president and the White House, and they make things work. So they are the kind of people you want to have on your side.
Deesha was my deputy, and she went on to become social secretary. My main thing was to reemphasize to her that she, the confidence, that she deserved the job. Like us, background is not what in the past it had been. I told her that's Mrs. Obama said that's fine, that's us. And I think that it was important for me to stress upon her she's capable of the job, and also on those days when people are really difficult and things are tough, take a breath and try not to focus on that. Focus on something else, because there are so many different egos and personalities that work in a White House. There's always going to be some tension between certain people.
And the general rule of thumb in life is it's not about you. And so often when we interact with someone in a negative way, we think that they're zeroing in on us, when in fact maybe they're not feeling well, or they're having real financial problems and they're distracted, and it's not personal. So having the perspective to take a step back and give someone the space to pull themselves together is something that we learned there that really helped us a lot.
Just speaking to you over these past few minutes, I sense a great humility from both of you, but in a small way or maybe a large way. Do you think your book can change the world and maybe reverse the coarsening of our society, or is that asking too much of a particular book or a particular endeavor?
Well, I think that every little bit helps, and I'm hoping that we contribute to it. I don't want to say that we're going to make everything change. I think that's difficult. But I do want to, even if it's one thing a day, or you practice it once or twice a day, treating people well and going out of your way, whether holding the door open or tipping the Uber driver or Lyft driver extra, is really goes a long way for them and in return for you.
And civility is not a fascinating subject, but we hope that by writing about some of the things that happened to us at the White House and telling the story about the woman who went through the magnetometers and turned back and said, "Can you tell I'm wearing two pairs of Spanx with that thing?" will make people be engaged enough to read the lessons too.
All right. Well, we'll see you tomorrow night, Saturday night, at Politics and Prose. That's at 6 o'clock. Maybe a little reading, some book signing. I suppose
you have
all kinds of great things planned.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We're looking forward to that too.
Well, thank you for coming to WTOP today. It was
Thanks
a great pleasure
us.
To meet you both and speak with you about
this
your book.
It was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.